This is CliffCentral.com.
It's Leon Bridges with River. And there was this, like a screaming child in the background at some point.
We were so confused.
Jesus. Yeah.
Great, great sound effect.
Do you know that that is the sound that pierces through all other sound? Obviously, it's designed.
Yes, meant to.
Yes, to make you go, something's wrong. Because if a kid, a human child makes a sound, it's meant to get the adult's attention. So it is designed. It is a particular evolutionary development of humans that we are most provoked by that noise.
There was some American person in politics, a woman who was on a plane and there was a baby crying.
Uh-huh.
And she blatantly said, I can't stand this. Move me to first class or whatever. Called the air hostess. The air hostess said, we can't accommodate you. And she said, well, do you want a job tomorrow?
Ooh. Sounds like then a... Is this Hillary Clinton?
No. Then the air hostess came up to her and said, I'm sorry, we're actually... Because the plane hadn't even taken off yet. We want you to leave the plane.
Oh.
And then she went, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'll sit here.
Right. Oh, look, it's a horrible sound. It's meant to be horrible.
Yeah, you just want it to stop by feeding it or changing it or doing something.
Yeah, you're meant to do something to make that go away.
Living in a family-friendly complex, that's the sound.
You hear it all the time? Oh, no. Poor you, Sia.
you just blocked out.
Family-friendly complex.
Yeah, I think we are out of, I'll easily say, like 100 units. We are one of 10
units who
don't have kids. So there's like a little play area. There are kids driving around all the time. You have to drive at a particular speed to ensure that you don't like drive
smash into a
kid.
A child. Yeah.
Yeah.
Try to do that, Sia. Try to keep to the drive slowly because there are children rule. All right. We mentioned just a moment ago, if you listened to the first hour, that Bird Box is this movie that everyone's talking about. Sandra Bullock is in it. Now, as I understand, the movie is about a demon or something that if you see it, you die. Or you want to commit suicide.
Apocalypse thing.
So you have to blindfold yourself so you don't see it.
And it reminded me of that other one where you can't make a noise.
Yes. A quiet place.
That is scary.
It's so good.
So this one, if you see this thing, you will kill yourself or something will happen to you. So she blindfolds these children and she's like, you can't take off your blindfold. And they go through this hell because they can't see anything. And the kids have to stay under these blankets the whole time. And that's the only time they actually get to see each other. Very weird. The whole thing's very, very weird.
So we haven't seen it.
No, I haven't watched the movie. So if I got that description wrong, you can correct me, please. I would love to hear what the actual story is without seeing it. Spongit has been to it. Did you watch the movie?
Yeah.
Am I right about what I said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, well, don't spoil the whole story, but that's basically the plot. Is it a scary movie?
Supposed to be.
Did you think it was ridiculous?
I don't want to spoil it for everyone,
yeah.
And again, I'm not a movie expert, but I thought they made a bit of too much hoo-ha, and I watched it, and I was like, what is the hoo-ha?
Yeah, because it was all over social media, and people posting memes, and we mentioned it briefly yesterday, but we didn't really get into it. There's a whole lot of people with memes of like them with blindfolds on, and some of it's very funny, but if you haven't seen the movie, I don't know if you'll get it. I didn't get a lot of it.
So it's based on a novel, a 2014 novel,
yeah,
of the same name by Josh Malerman.
Mm-hmm. Is Sandra Bullock good in it?
Yeah, she is.
That poor woman, she's... Horrible things always happen to her characters in all these movies.
The children's names are boy and girl.
Boy and girl.
Okay.
So what's that all about?
I mean, she just didn't name the children.
Because she doesn't want to lose them, so if she loses them, she won't have to feel as bad because they're just called boy and girl.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it's just boy and girl, and I was like, what?
So I just don't get the challenge, though. Who in their right mind thinks this is a smart thing to do? So once you've explained the concept of the movie in that way, I'm putting two and two together. There is, I think what we've all seen with the memes is the scene of... Sandra Bullock with a blindfold over her eyes and her two kids also blindfolded, and they're trying to escape. So you've seen them like in a boat, yeah, or they're trying to run away.
Yes.
And the premise of the challenge are people
the
doing
the Bird Box challenge. The
hashtag Bird Box challenge. People doing the same thing as well. Now, if you just search it on social media, the top post that you see is an idiot of a parent or someone older with his own two kids,
and they like
all three of them are blindfolded. He runs with the kids, and actually his smallest child, which is a toddler, walks straight into a wall. Who sits and thinks, love the movie so much, also want to be involved, let's do this? Well, now your baby might have a concussion, dude.
Oh,
like, I don't get it. Where are you, Darwin? Come back and tell us what to do with all of these people.
God, what a stupid challenge.
I don't get what the satisfaction is.
Somebody says, I wish you'd just sign these things. If you send us a message, put your name on it so I can give you credit. Welcome back, guys. I'm in rainy Sedgefield. That's on the garden routes here. Yeah, it's a beautiful part of the world. Not sure what the other person was saying. The roads were crawling with traffic cops this December. Total F-up for us that we don't pay our fines. Oh, yeah, if you don't pay your fines, they're going to pull you over. And by the way, whoever this person is says, Bird Box, don't do it. I will never get that time back.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, anything that becomes a big deal on social media, I could stay away from. Hey, Spongile, while we're talking to you, you apparently were meant to go on a holiday, but you didn't get your papers in time, or...
Yeah.
What happened to you?
Oh, that was so sad. So, I mean, I went to apply for my, I think, beginning of December, for my passport. And
where were you going to go?
To Moz.
Mozambique. Nice.
Yeah. Okay. Shai.
Beautiful.
So, for some odd reason, closer to the day, I'm just like, this is clearly not going to happen. So, because of that, I just started changing everything. I postponed everything.
Did
my boyfriend
booked,
went after me.
You'd already booked everything and...
Yeah, I just, like, postponed it because, you know, other than that, I was just going to lose my money, you know. And I had to rebook for other things.
Okay.
Or use it for something else, you know. But my boyfriend went after me, and his was ready for some odd reason. Mine, even now, I still haven't gotten my passport.
Sexism, clearly. Oh.
That's what I thought, Gareth.
So you wanted your passport, and how long did it take them?
I think probably now it's like way past 4 weeks.
4 weeks, and still nothing?
Geez. No, not even a word, nothing.
That's so weird.
At some point, I thought maybe I wrote my number wrong, but I remember getting the text after I went to apply for it.
Did you go to Home Affairs?
Yeah, I went to Home Affairs. Okay. That says, well, we got your application, you know. I got that SMS, so I thought, oh, well, I guess it's not me. Even a friend of mine who went after me got hers.
Sure. What's the time frame they give you at Home Affairs now?
They said to me 13 days, 13 working days or less.
Sure.
And
they didn't. They lied.
You never know. It's just sometimes a hit or miss, hey?
Yeah. So clearly it's about 2 months. I'm like waiting. I'll give them 2 months.
Okay.
Then I complain.
Well, it's kind of a sad thing for you because you missed out on your holiday.
Yeah, I had to change my plans and go somewhere else.
That's terrible.
Because I still wanted the ocean breeze.
And then you still also saw Bird Box, which is apparently another big waste of time.
Yeah, that was a lot.
Shame. Poor you. Shittiest December ever.
I had a horrible time.
Poor you.
Shame.
Wait all year for that holiday and then this happens to you. And Bird Box.
I mean, there is another addition to it. Yeah. I went to Durban, and what was supposed to be my accommodation, which was had great reviews on Book, was the most horrific thing ever.
Was it not at all like the pictures?
It was supposed to be a Durban penthouse overlooking the ocean.
What is it?
Looked like some run-down building in Hillbrow, of which I proceeded not to even walk in. My boyfriend went in. Well, he went in there, didn't even go into the building, just spoke to the lady outside, and he was just like, she looks very desperate. And then we reversed the money as fast as we could and found new accommodation. We were lucky that we found...
Yeah, because it must have been tough to get
a place.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's happened to me, so don't feel bad.
Oh,
and it happened to me before the era of like bookings websites when we were still at varsity. Me and a bunch of friends booked a place, and we went there and we saw it, and it was so filthy and horrible and not located where they said it was.
Yeah, I know.
Ugh, people lie.
Well, the funny is, when we're looking at Waze, we could still see the big, the penthouse is not there, but it says you have arrived, which was a bit weird because I was like, but the penthouse, it clearly does, it's not here.
Penthouse.
And the lady was like, no, it's that building.
Oh,
that,
no.
That one. When I looked at it, I was like, I'm not walking in. Probably smells like pee there.
Oh.
I'm just not doing it.
Poor you.
It was a lot.
Poor you. This is the worst December.
Listen, it was a challenge. And I can honestly say I made it.
You're here now. Aren't you glad to be back at work where you're safe?
Wait. I was glad to go back to my bed. I was like, oh, bed, look at you, beauty.
Once again, I see in cases like this that I'm not really a great relationship person. Because if I was someone's boyfriend and my passport came out first, I'm like, okay, cheers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you're a horrible
person. See you in a week. Yeah,
he's a horrible
What's
person.
What's wrong with you?
Oh, I need to suntan and I'll see you in a week.
All right. Well, the R. Kelly saga continues. You've heard there are all these revelations coming out in this new docu-series about R. Kelly and what a creep he is and all these underage girls and he kept them in his house. And he's basically just he's a filthy, filthy human being. But there's still R. Kelly fans who just don't want to accept this. There was this guy on social media. Listen to this dude. He's so upset. He's crying. He's a big R. Kelly fan and he's crying about this and he can't believe
you want to put one black man, one example, America, as though he invented this shit. As though
he's crying. By the way, he's wiping his eyes the whole time.
Wow.
And what I don't get is like when someone, why would this be about him being a black man? He's just a horrible person. No matter who he belongs to, ethnically and racially and. And gender-wise, that's the worst thing.
No one's saying about Kevin Spacey, and he's a white man. Mm.
Yeah, no one. I'm not claiming him. Like, imagine me going on TV, YouTube. I'm so upset because Kevin Spacey makes white men look bad.
Yeah, and this imagine is not a that. Good connotation. This is when you actually want to run away from someone. And
right.
No, not be associated
Kelly
with him.
Is the number one pedophile on the planet. Mm. When the average American, Caucasian white man has been raping the whole planet and everybody on it. And you tell me R. Kelly deserves.
Oh, no.
He deserves, just him. I'm not defending him. But R. Kelly deserves a documentary. And the whole black nation doesn't deserve a documentary for what America has done to us? You mean to tell me? Millions of us. Millions. Children. Men and women. Being raped. On farms. By men. By women with metal utensils.
Oh my God.
You mean to tell me, America, you are going to go on Lifetime, which is owned by A&E, which is owned by Robert.
He has to look at his notes.
A.K.A. Bob Iger. A&E, which is owned by Robert, A.K.A. Bob Iger, who was arrested for child pornography. America, you use the channel owned by another channel.
There's some psychopathy here that someone needs to figure out. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy's, he's a huge R. Kelly fan, and he's posted that, I don't want to hear any more bad things about R. Kelly. He's so upset, and he's been basically that clip that I played you is part of a live hour and a half. This guy goes on this rant about how everybody's victimizing R. Kelly. It reminds me of that guy who, remember when Britney Spears lost her mind and she shaved her head, and that guy went on. It was the first real like wave of social media nobodies who started standing up for celebrities. And this guy's like, "Leave Britney alone." And I always thought, what a strange thing to dedicate your time to, defending.
And to have actual tears over.
Yeah, well, this guy was dabbing his. You don't see this when I'm playing the clip and you're just listening to the podcast, but he's. Tears are streaming down his face. Clearly upset about it.
Oh, my God.
Very odd.
I think that in and of itself is worrying, that you don't know the person personally.
No, what? He's not a friend of R. Kelly.
But so attached.
Yeah. And then he turns it into a thing that, like, this is an attack on him and all black men, and you're a lunatic, dude. No, you need to find better heroes. That's what you need to do.
Jeepers. Do you know one of the interesting things that came out of this documentary, and it's the first of six that will still air.
You mean there's more?
Yeah. It's a six-part series, all in all. His music sales have spiked from this.
Yeah.
Spotify just said they said there was an increase by 16% after part one of the docuseries aired.
How does that happen? What are people thinking when they now buy his music? I don't
know. Maybe they're listening to the stuff now, trying to pick up on creepy stuff in his songs. Maybe
that could be it.
Or maybe there might be new fans as well.
On the actual documentary, there's a lady who R. Kelly picked up during his trial. Mm-hmm. So clearly, people have no issue with such thing. When they were prosecuting him for doing these things, he sent out some guys to pick out the lady who was outside as a fan, saying, my God, he's innocent.
I'm here for this trial, but I still want to have sex with you afterward. Creep.
Very much.
Creepy, creepy man.
And another thing that shocked me is he can't read and write well.
Apparently he's illiterate.
I didn't know this. I was like, what?
Shame. If you can see then you can do it.
Spelled B-E-W.
If you can believe it. Spelled B-E-L-E-E-V-E-E-E. Then you can achieve it.
Don't even ask me how you spell achieve.
Eva.
Yeah, please.
Achieve.
Do me a favor.
It's just the creep factor of it all. How do you think he can recover from this? In terms of just public perception? Because I think he'll still put out music and his fans will still be his fans.
Someone's on the line who wants to address this question.
Oh, dear, yes.
Good morning, sir. Go ahead.
I just want to say that I don't have a problem with anything that R. Kelly's done.
Would you like to tell us your name?
I would like to remain anonymous.
Oh, yeah. You sound very much like...
Like who? Go on, say it.
Bill Cosby?
No, this is Bill Clinton.
All right, thank you, Bill.
Wow.
Yeah, I think he's ruined his life, really. This is.
How do you come back from that? I mean, Kevin Spacey's the same thing, right? Because Kevin Spacey, like, there's some things that are just so egregious to humans. Like, all of us, most of us, 99% of us agree that if you take advantage of someone who's underage, sexually, or, you know, you groom them, or you talk to them about stuff they shouldn't be hearing at age 14 or whatever. We all know that's bad. All of us. You have like a built-in horror and a reaction of like, ew.
A yuck monitor.
Same way with hearing a baby cry, you were saying earlier.
Yeah. R. Kelly and Kevin Spacey and all of these people. I mean, it's the same in some ways as a gross guy like Weinstein forcing himself on these young actresses, even though they're not underage. It's a different kind of a crime. Yeah. There's something about people pushing themselves sexually onto people that don't really have an option that's just so wrong. It's just so gross.
Mm.
I can imagine no more off-putting situation than trying to have sex with someone who doesn't want to have sex with me.
Mm.
I don't know how that works. That's why I've never understood guys who are turned on by a situation where whoever they're trying to hit on isn't turned on by them. Must be so frustrating.
Yet they see it as a position of power.
Look, and I'm no psychologist in this, but it doesn't take one to see the situation for what it is. You know, like a Weinstein thing, there's been a lot of talk around, it's a power thing.
Yeah.
Right? He's in a power role.
About, yeah, right.
But in R. Kelly's case, if...
But he locked this woman up. There's this one woman, he locked her up in his house.
That to me says there are bigger issues at play. He has several mansions where he would have a throng of girls at times, you know, like 6, 7, 8 girls at a time, and he would control everything about their lives.
He would he'd give them money to do certain things. He would make sure that they wore certain outfits.
Yes,
they would have to do things together.
Some of the girls say that they even had to ask him for approval before they had a shower. So he would tell you can now go and bath. That's twisted behavior.
Very weird.
That's not just, oh, I'm a horny guy and I have the means and the money to do so.
That's like, there's something in your childhood that, I don't know, you've got to get a psychologist in here to talk about
when you're attracted
this
to your mother.
So let's watch the rest. There's still five episodes to go.
So much more.
Get ready, R. Kelly fans. Also, someone says, it's Graham. He says, do yourself a favor and check out a guy named Jesse Lee Peterson. He has called Donald Trump the Great White Hope. It's hilarious how he's triggered people. His YouTube channel is called The Fallen State. It's apparently very funny. And are we not going to talk about the Clifton Beach incident? You know, Graham, it's so weird that you bring that up, but I don't think it's important. I know that there are lots of people who got very, very worked up about this. That is exactly the kind of news. When I was talking this morning about provocative stuff in the news.
Yeah.
Doesn't affect you.
I haven't even read into it.
I've avoided
it.
You know straight away this is a story designed to provoke a reaction in you, to get clicks, to get people reading, to get people worked up. First of all, there are sheep slaughtered every single day behind the walls of abattoirs that people are eating, having roast lamb and lamb braais, and especially over the holidays. Nobody seems to be all up in arms about those sheep. You know what this is. This is about a small group of political activists trying to get everybody all wound up. It's a racial thing. It doesn't affect you or me. I saw pictures from friends of mine who went to Clifton Beach the next day. It was normal. Back to normal. Everything was back to normal. The day before, normal. How did it affect your life? It got your blood pressure up, made you cross, made you think, oh, the country's full of anger and vitriol and race hatred.
The end is nigh.
I was at gym on that same day in Johannesburg. There were black guys, white guys. We were all training together. No one was thinking about Clifton Beach. Nobody cares. Most South Africans just want to get on with their lives. So the short answer, Graham, is I don't care, and neither should you. They're trying to get your attention. These are attention-seeking people. Don't give them attention. I do feel bad for the poor old sheep that it was hauled into the sea and then had its throat slit, but bad things happen to sheep all the time. Okay?
No, they're destined for not greatness.
No. Very small chance if you grow up as a sheep anywhere in the world that you're going to live happily in this pasture.
Unless you're a dairy sheep.
Oh, Clifton.
A dairy sheep?
I like sheep's milk.
They milk sheep?
Yes, and they make cheese out of it. It's lovely.
And then they don't make them into meat?
Yes. So some of them do live happy, long lives.
Oh.
But they still get milked.
Yeah.
It's kind of gross. All right. Bird Box is good, says Cassandra. Sandra is excellent in the role. It's called Bird Box because they figure out that birds can sense the evil spirit or whatever it is, and then they carry a bird with them to know when they're in danger. The whole point of the film is that they need to get to a safe place in the forest to hide from the spirits. The place is basically a 48-hour trip down a river. That's the Sandra Bullock movie called Bird Box.
I'll give it a watch.
Yeah.
With all of the hype, might as well.
You've got to know what's going on, right?
Yeah, at least.
Okay, so a couple things in the news. Leanne, what do you want to bring us this morning?
Would you like to know the top 10 academic schools in South Africa right now?
Sure.
With the matric results out and everything.
Are these the best schools?
These are the best schools.
Okay.
The fees for these best schools start at 30,000 rand a year. Now, you must know that some schools cost 400 rand a year.
Hmm.
Right.
I think my school cost 400 rand a year. I definitely got a very average education.
None of them are in Joburg.
Hmm.
The closest we've got is one in Pretoria. The rest are in Cape Town, Stellenbosch, Durban, and Vryheid, mostly Cape Town.
So chances are, if you've got a child in Joburg and you want them to be educated in Joburg, they're going to come out with a fairly average education. All right, give me the top 10. Let's go.
Okay.
Do the list.
10th place, I haven't heard of half of these.
Okay.
10th place, Westerford High School in Cape Town. 9th is Inkamana High School in Vryheid. Al-Fala College in Durban.
Wow.
Michael Oak Waldorf School, Cape Town. Star College, Durban.
I've never heard of any of these schools. Not one of these that I know.
I know of the two in Durban.
Okay.
Al-Fala Afrikaanse Hoër, Star College.
Afrikaanse Hoër Macy School.
That's in Pretoria.
Pretoria.
Yeah, that one I know.
Rustenburg Girls High School, Cape Town. Third place, Bloemhof Hoër School in Stellenbosch.
Okay.
Second is Springfield Covent Senior School in Cape Town. And first place, Herschel Girls School in Cape Town. So Herschel Girls School, the fees for the year is 109,000 rand. The second place fee jumps way down to 68,000 rand.
Okay, but what kind of results did they get? That's very impressive. If they're on this top 10 list, they must be smart people there, and they must be getting a really good quality education.
Mm.
Hey, you wanted to have children. If you have to pay 168 grand a year, that's your fault.
Sure.
So Herschel Girls School achieved an average of 5.3 distinctions per pupil.
Ooh.
5.3.
Springfield Covent got an average of 4.1 distinctions per pupil. So yeah, it might be worth it if you've got the backs.
Sure.
Your 100, your, it's so expensive.
I was at the doctor's rooms yesterday, and he ushered us into his room, into his consulting room, but he'd only came in about 15 minutes later because he was playing a sound clip to his receptionist, who's his wife, of their son, who had just received 8 distinctions.
Oh, wow, whoop-dee-doo. Get to your patience.
I was losing patience.
Let me tell you something.
Hey, that is impressive,
These
though.
These parents are so impressed with their children. Your child is not as impressive as you think, even if you're paying 168 grand a year for them. They're probably just very ordinary kids.
But in the days of your child possibly eating Tide Pods and walking into walls with the Bird Box Challenge, you should be grateful for distinctions.
Please, you know, that I have to... I don't want to hear about your kids' matric results. I don't care. I do not care. You know what? We've got a problem. We've got a problem in that out of 100 people who start start grade one, you know how many qualify at the end of that?
What was it?
The total statistic. Out of every 100 people who registered for grade one 12 years ago, 7 have got through matric.
Jeez.
7. And we've got an education department that's busy boasting about a 79% pass rate in matric. What happened to the other 93 people? That's what we should be asking. That's what we should be talking about.
Yeah.
A nation of dummies.
And also, you can get 8 distinctions at school. Academic intelligence is different to being streetwise. And
sure.
A lot of people, as we know, famous people, weren't educated beyond primary school and have been really successful.
Our former president was like... he got to be president of this country of dummies, because he had other skills that weren't taught to him at school, and he became the most important man in the country. Very nearly sank us all, but he got there.
You mean the budding recording artist?
Jacob Gedlitligis.
There we go. With the recording deal.
What a job.
What a time.
It's a good place to go. Maybe he and R. Kelly can get together one day and do it.
I will have to say, I do, though, love what the Gauteng Department of Education has done. They've looked at the top-performing students, and they said that they'll give a certain number of the top performers a 4-year university bursary.
Well, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you have to. I know it, like, pains sometimes.
No, the point is, for me, like... We're also focused on university education, right, which is absolutely an important part of what we should be doing in terms of upskilling ourselves, qualifying ourselves. What we really need to do is find work for people who don't have academic qualifications and an ability with maths and with language. We've got to find work for those people. I'm talking about that 93 out of the 100.
Yeah. Mm.
Those people have got to be gainfully employed. The economy can't carry them. They need to be turned into people with skilled abilities in labor, people who can make things, people who can fix things, people who can repair stuff, people who are resourceful. You know, that's what the economy needs. We don't need more political science and arts graduates. I don't see how that's going to help anybody. Mm. Let's find people with those skills and help them to get the opportunities they need.
Anyway, yeah.
All right, that's all we got time for this morning, because I want to bring Robin Wheeler in here. He's pacing around the room. He's written a new book. It's called Death is the Ultimate Orgasm, a handbook on how to live and die. Talk about a provocative title. Hey, Leanne?
Isn't an orgasm called the little death, known as the little death?
Well, we'll find out from Robin Wheeler. Of course, Robin Wheeler is a business mystic who's coined the phrase being yourself for a living. He did that all the way back in 1996, before all the millennials started saying, live your best life. Robin had already figured that one out, and he's been inspiring the world to personify it since. This is a fat book, Robin Wheeler. How long did it take you to put this together? How are you, man? Nice to see you. It's very, very good to have you in the studio this morning.
Morning, Gareth.
Yeah.
Morning, Leanne.
Good
morning,
good work.
Sia. Morning, everyone.
Good work on the book.
Thanks so much.
It says on the cover, don't die before you read this.
Yeah. It's when you're putting a book together, you first write it, but then when you publish it, you come up with all the different aspects needed to make it a work of art, and that one came to me right at the end. So it's part of enticing you in. It's a seduction into a relationship with yourself on a whole new level.
Okay.
By coming to terms with death rather than being in denial of it.
So you talk about the two biggest taboos in modern society, that is death and sex.
Yes.
And you put them into the title of this book, Death is the Ultimate Orgasm. Is Leanne right that they call the orgasm a little death?
It's in the book. Uh-huh. It does come up. And uh-huh. People often raise that. Anyone who knows French knows that saying.
Very good.
And the book unpacks that. And it's just one of many strands of...
Petit mort.
Yeah, that's it. So we're dying all the time.
Thanks very much for that. All right, there's the end of the show, everybody.
That's what I came to tell you.
We need to go off and die.
Currently, you are dying, so Robin wanted to just fill you with inspiration, and that's all we have time for this morning. Thank
yes,
you.
Well, explain? Jokes aside, no. That is actually the bottom line here, because if you're in denial of death, you can't live properly. But if you can face that we're dying all the time, firstly, it makes you live much more consciously, which is mm-hmm. what we really need at the moment. I think we'll probably
but Robin,
get into it.
Okay, let's get to the gist of your book here, because I think this is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you too. It's the start of a brand new year. Right. People are full of ideas and priorities and inspiration, and they want to get their lives together. If you live with the idea that you're dying, isn't that depressing?
Well, maybe on a superficial level, and some people, if you're not dealing with it realistically, it might feel depressing because it's confronting you with something you don't want to face, but you're living in denial, so you're living in illusion. But if you wake up to reality, like your internal reality, that you are going to die mm-hmm. and you should live accordingly, otherwise you're a fool, you go through that depressed barrier into, well, that's reality, and it sets you alive. It frees you from the things that's like your ego. You just become more present and more alert, and
you maybe start to realize, like, this is what I've got, let me make the most of it.
Yes, exactly. Okay. That sort of thing. And then live in consciousness and use your death as an advisor. Something is, well, is this worth getting worked up about? I'm gonna die. Well, not really. Okay.
That's what I think. Makes a lot of sense the way you put it. It's a considerable book. I asked you earlier, how long did it take you to write it? Was it a massive task?
Well, I'd say on one way to answer that would be my whole life. It took me my whole life to write it. But the way it happened is I was in Thailand last year. In fact, it was 1 year and 2 days ago.
Uh-huh.
And I met with a man named Simon Napier Bell, who managed Wham and George Michael in the 80s.
Wow.
Mark Bolan in the 70s.
He must have seen some stuff.
Whoa.
he's written some books, and you'll, by reading those, know that he's seen everything.
Yeah.
So it was a fascinating
Did you guys
experience.
Just bump into each other at the beach?
Not quite. We, George
Were you
Michael
sharing the same lady boy? I mean,
oh, how did this happen?
Well, Simon suggested that, but I wasn't keen. You know. It's he lives in Pattaya, which is near Bangkok, and I was in Phuket, which is my sort of second home.
Yeah.
And what had actually happened is the year before, George Michael had died, and a friend of mine had an old book of Simon's written about those Wham days. And it reminded her of that, and she reread it, and she sent it to me because it reminded her of me.
Oh.
And I followed Simon. I remembered his name from the 80s, you know.
Sure.
When I went through all those years when Wham happened, and I got those music magazines every week from the UK, 2 months
sure.
late by sea. And so I knew the name, but I hadn't heard it for a couple of decades, you know. So I followed him on Facebook, and then he quoted George, did a story, a little short thing about George, and shared that with my community and said, George is an example of someone being themselves for a living, which is my brand.
Right.
And Simon is an example of the kind of manager I need to collaborate with. And the next morning there was a message from Simon and
You're
talking
kidding.
About being yourself for a living and how much he related to it. So to cut the story short, when I was in Thailand next, we flew up to see him and spent a whole day with him. He suggested we just get together at 11 and see what happens, and that finished at 1 o'clock the next morning. And God. So we had
you put it out there and look what happens.
Yeah.
Well, whilst we were talking that evening, we got to this point where it was banter, really, you know. And
wow.
All the deep stuff, sex, death, life, music, all the real stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, sort of half a liter of wine down, he said something and I chirped back, well, death is the ultimate orgasm. And he said, there's your bestseller.
Jesus, guys, he's good, huh?
Simon says it.
So he gave
well, exactly.
you...
Simon says,
Simon
exactly.
says, and you do.
So he gave you the title of your book?
No, I came up with it. He validated it. And I just realized, as a creative person, you know, you're kind of open to whatever's going to drop at any moment. And I'd actually stopped writing my Insight series for a while and deliberately given myself space for a new voice and a new energy. And as I heard that moment happen in front of me, I just knew the mm-hmm. book was there. And I started writing that morning when we got back. At 3 o'clock in the morning, I was writing. And wrote flat out for about 4.5 months. Came back to Joburg and wrote that book. And then I worked through it a few times. And so I got it out the same year that I started it, which
That's
is as much the statement.
Very
as
impressive.
The, thanks.
No, because I mean, I know how much work goes into a book, and it can sometimes be an ordeal.
It truly is.
Because you want to tie things together, and there's parts that you have to leave out and things that you have to keep in. And
decisions.
Yeah. So the book, you say you focus on these two taboos. I mean, we've briefly addressed death, but sex and death, are these really the two biggest taboos in the world?
Yeah, well, I mean... Putting that as the one heading there, I thought about that. And in a way, yes. In a way, not. I mean, sexual liberation has happened very quickly, and that's really changed the world, you know.
Yeah, because I think people are starting to become more comfortable about talking about sex, and we probably should. It's healthy to.
Definitely.
If you consider old attitudes, particularly in this country, and you address some of those in your book as well. You know, South Africa used to be this tremendously conservative place where anything – even vaguely in the arena of sex, was probably not to be discussed publicly.
Sure. Yeah, and I mean, magazines were banned, and you'd had to sneak them in through your luggage. Now porn is the most prolific thing. In fact, we even over porn. You know, like porn was so 2 years ago.
I do. I think that's a very good observation. But tell me what other things that you... researched and discovered that contributed to the idea that we need to break these taboos and come to terms with death and sex.
Well, your relationship with sex, I mean, maybe it's become more sort of biologically discussed and taught at schools, and you know, we can talk like this but it's also, sex is a mystery, and the sexual orgasm is a moment where your mind stops. So it's actually the pinnacle of meditation. It's just meditation that we all know about, but we don't realize it's meditation.
Whoa.
So it's a spiritual, it's a little window into enlightenment.
That's an interesting thing. Never thought of it that way. Because you're chasing the pleasure, but actually you're right. It is a moment of total focus.
Or conversely, expanse. There's nothing there. There's no mind, because mind limits. Mind is the false, and mind is the old. And we're moving into an era now of a more awakened state, so that's actually the window into the enlightenment we all need so that we don't fuck the planet up irreparably.
We should be banging our brains out. Is that what you're saying?
As a spiritual practice.
Yeah, that's all we've got time for. We're off to bang.
Bang your brains out and you'll realize it's a spiritual experience, and then do it as a spiritual experience.
But what about these people who tell you, oh no, but that's just hedonism?
What?
If you're just chasing orgasms.
Sure, on that's what I even said.
How do you make it spiritual? How do you make it matter?
Well, you know that it's a window to spirituality, or make it a spirit, like be present. So when you're with someone, be with that person rather than the porno star that you watched the night before. Don't be in your head, be in the moment. Be in your body, feel, be sensual, be tantric, be here now. That's the state that we all need to shift into, so we stop destroying the planet and actually co-create something that is enlightened and not based on the past. Because we've got 12 years. I read an article this week somewhere. I've forgotten where it was, but 12 years environmentally. Gareth, I turned 50. That book all converged into that.
Mm-hmm.
In 1970, when I was 1.5, there were 4 billion people on the Earth. We're chasing 8.
Doubled.
I'm half a lifetime old.
We've got 12 years of what?
Oh,
to have sex?
Yeah, exactly.
Shit. What's happening in 12 years?
The environment
is going to collapse around us.
It
becomes unsustainable for us to.
It is. This isn't like something to think about. It's something to change our lives in order to prevent the bad and to ride that wave and turn this into our survival. But the only way to survive is to thrive. The only way to still be here is to become enlightened, which is what we want anyway. That's what we're here to find.
Robin, you know, we've discussed, in fact, a bunch of your books are here in the studio, and we've had you on the show before, and I love talking to you. But one of the things I have a problem with, and I'm sure you do as well, because you realize that the reality for most people is that enlightenment is so many steps too far. For the average person's survival is, even that is almost unattainable to them. They wake up in the morning, they're hungry, they're desperate, they've got a horrible job, they've got sometimes people in their lives that they don't even like. They are constantly looking for something to blame because life is impossible and insurmountable. Enlightenment is so far in the distance for most of these people. And I don't want to sound patronizing about it, but you can see by the way that they live their lives that people are not thinking in an enlightened way.
They're in emergency mode permanently.
They just want to survive that day.
But now
you
that
think it's getting worse?
It's getting worse rapidly, exponentially. But things only get better when they get worse. And the old has to die. Death is the ultimate orgasm.
So what's the old that has to die?
The unconsciousness. And it's intensifying so that we actually wake up. The living in the mind, being able to be fooled by the media so that you're actually doing, you're not making your own decisions, you're not there.
Mm-hmm.
You're just being used, we're biological cargo, stock. That's the dark side, of course. And we have to come to terms with the dark side, death, birth, death, life, death, morning, night. On the level of duality, there's opposites. That's how we move, but we've got a higher consciousness, and we've got to wake up to that so that we manage our duality wisely, rather than we just destroying it basically at a rate. Another thing, the other statistics, the things that are happening in the world, just the biggest threat being artificial intelligence. Okay, and two steps behind that, nuclear war and climate change. Now, I'm not debating climate change, but if the population in my lifetime has doubled, that has had an effect. There is no doubt about
it. For sure.
So, let's not get lost in the mind and the debate. Let's transform our consciousness. Because what I say in my book, it takes death and it takes life, and it comes at it from all different angles. George Michael, Elon Musk. So, the thing with Elon Musk is I'm saying, if I am burnt out and I need to go to Thailand for 3 months, I'm going to take myself to Thailand. Whatever problems I've got are going to go with me.
Mm-hmm.
I can then work on them there and unpack them and become clear. But if we go to Mars, who goes and who decides who goes? The Illuminati. So the people, we're just going to take our virus, our mind, to Mars and fuck that up as well.
So how do we escape this?
We face ourselves and we awaken. We face ourselves.
With more orgasms?
Yes, well, an orgasm's a start, because those people that you're saying, that description you said, in the
These people in survival mode.
Yes, in the mind is linear. So in survival or in mind, you will think, okay, those people are just trying to, on Maslow's hierarchy, they're just trying to get the basics. Enlightenment so far away. And on one level, that's true. We just have to walk around a mall to see how far away enlightenment is. Yet those people all have orgasms, hopefully, you know, often. So they do taste it, they just don't know. And it's right here. So if someone who lives a simple life, which is what I actually have found for me works and what I suggest, live a simple life. I think it's going to happen one way or the other.
Do you mean
that's spiritual?
Do you mean declutter? Do you mean you don't need so much materially?
Yeah.
It's experiences rather than things.
You don't have to own. For example, those people can have access to a 5-star hotel, even if they save up for 2 years on the go for one night.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you don't own anything, if you're moving around and all you've got, you need somewhere to sleep. Like when I go to Thailand, I just have a room. All I need is a good bed, an air conditioner, a motorbike, and an ATM card. And I'm the happiest man you've ever met, except for tomorrow when I'm even happier. So, but you can have access to any hotel. You don't need to own a car. You can just get into one.
So where'd you bring this up? A friend of mine who I saw over the December break, he said to me he's just met this dude who lives like that, like you do. Goes over there and spends almost a whole year. Right. And he is just the happiest, most contented, centered.
In himself.
And generous and kind and full of all of those things that we admire in other people. But I can't imagine myself in a situation like that. I'm happy achieving things, building things, growing things,
right.
Creating stuff, and doing that obviously with the motive of self-satisfaction and profit and all of those things. And to me, that's also a good selection of goals to have.
Sure. Now, so that's something, when you put your finger on that issue, that's something in my book that's actually very strong. It's not necessarily said out. The book doesn't give you answers. It doesn't say, here's the 7-step plan. Mm. It takes you on a journey and it lets you find out for yourself, because we're already going through all this. We just don't talk about it. And so you don't give it credit. So I validate. And then I also stimulate you to go and do more things. What you're saying there, those two things need to be both, because in my book, I'm coming from an Eastern perspective. It's a spirituality of presence. It's a mindfulness.
And it has to be said also, since your book is about sex and death, Eastern philosophies and Eastern religions, I don't necessarily want to get into the differences between them, but they tend to embrace death and sex.
Exactly.
Whereas Western religions and spirituality, if there is such a thing, they tried to exclude sex and death from the equation.
Yeah,
they tried to make it an other.
Exactly. So now it's waking up past those dogmas that have been used for, they're actually there to control society, and they're political tools, and which people are waking up to as well. This whole thing of this informal media where you can find out all sorts of things, and you go into those dark tunnels of conspiracy theory, and you have to reevaluate your whole life. I did that for a while, for years. It took me 2 or 3 years to go through that patch. But you have to wake up to the darkness in the world so that you can actually be the light. You can't be the light in ignorance. You have to face your own darkness. As an individual, that's how you heal. That's how you become an artist. That's how you, and in the book, what I'm saying is we've got a transcendent awareness. We need to come from that. And death, the death of the human race, the death of the planet, is going to push us to either awaken or die. And it's only in a do-or-die situation that you actually change and awaken. And then you let go of what isn't you, and you live a simple life, you're creative, you're happy, you don't...
Almost like the ascetics.
What's that?
An ascetic is sort of like those gurus that used to...
Like a monk, yeah.
They would subsist on, you know, the minimum of everything, and they would have one outfit, and they would have one meal a day, and they would meditate, and they would connect spiritually with animals and with rocks and with plants. And no. I mean, I'm obviously mocking it now, but the basic idea here is to simplify your life and to cut down on unnecessary things.
On the one hand. And on the other hand, up the ante. Live, enjoy, be rich. Richness, spiritual richness and physical richness are not opposites. Mm. Those people are all bent in the wrong direction. But what they've found is that consciousness. They've tasted the consciousness. So you bring the consciousness into the modern world. Because in my book, I've awakened to a spiritual place for myself in my life that could be described as an Eastern insight. Mm-hmm. But I'm a Westerner. My ancestors are all English.
Yeah.
We got on fucking ships and went and did bad shit, but yeah. Good shit too.
Yeah, yeah.
So
sure.
We've all got dark sides and coming together with my ancestry. And so the African spirituality is very ancestor-based. It's mm-hmm. an awareness of living presences that are not physical bodies like we are for the time. So there's a relationship beyond death with the spiritual realm.
Okay.
The Greeks talked about the gods orchestrating your life being a drama. So again, the higher consciousness can see life's a drama. And then the other layers of you do the fucking drama.
So how do you, let's start with basic principles here. Because for a lot of people, this is going to be difficult to follow without reading your book. And I would suggest if you're interested in this, you do read the book. But how do you even begin to define consciousness? Because you talk about it like it's something we all understand.
Yes.
How can you live a conscious life? And it doesn't mean you're just awake.
Yeah.
I mean, consciousness does not refer to when you wake up in the morning and the period between then and when you go to sleep.
Yeah, that could be, the awakened one, so to speak, will tell you that that's still a state of sleep. I mean, if I say to you, do you remember yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
Your day at work, it was Monday.
I can remember events.
But it was like a dream.
Yeah.
Like patchy. Did it actually happen, or was that also a dream?
Oh, no. Okay. No, don't.
But you're clutching at reality. So what I'm doing is I'm challenging your reality, and I'm saying life depends on your perspective, and the more awakened you are, the more you can see, the more intelligently you can deal with it, the more relaxed you can be. So consciousness, your question, what it is and how to access it. I'd say the first thing is just know it's our natural state, and we've been lost from it. So you just got to get rid of what is in the way. Your baggage, your heavy life, your investment in things. You can, because just to finish my point and to come back to that one, I am a warrior. I have a myth in me. Bruce Springsteen needed to be a rock star and then beyond, because he's now a legend of great proportions. George mm-hmm. Michael needed to live his story. I saw John McEnroe play tennis at Wimbledon in 92. And when that guy was on that court, it was like if he'd been born 50 years before, he would have died because he was born to play tennis, and they didn't have tennis like that 50 years before. If Bruce Springsteen had been born before rock and roll, he would have died or been a
factory worker or something.
Yeah, his father.
Sure.
You see? So now we are all awakening to that. My father, my grandfather's history, his story, his ancestral myth, I've got that too. So on that level, I have to live my life.
Except that you've got endless opportunities now to live out your fantasies.
So that is the bottom line. The world is, it's a do or die situation, and it's a very, very exciting one if we wake up.
What's holding most of us back?
Unconsciousness, really. Attachment to things. And then if you don't listen to the ancestors, they push harder. So people who are called to be Sangomas get ill. If you don't listen to life, if you don't listen to your higher self, if you don't listen to God, if you like, I'm not one to use that word comfortably.
Okay. Yeah.
You're going to get knocked harder and harder until you hear. And then you wake up and you drop the things that don't work for you anymore and you choose the ones that do. And that's what the world is doing. If we awaken, we can manage. We have paradise here on earth. We just need to stop doing unconscious things and do more creative, co-creative conscious things.
That's what
my life's about. That's what the book does. It takes you through a journey of awakening to how we need to be in the future, which is now.
And it's not all serious. I mean, we're talking about philosophy and spirituality and consciousness. Yeah, deep shit. But you're at the same time, there's a little bit of mischief and fun.
Absolutely.
And playing with the world and enjoying being mortal.
Well,
because this is what the gods wanted to experience. And you talk about Western philosophy and Western religion. And part of the reason that Zeus would transform himself into a mortal man occasionally was so that he could have mortal experiences, because that's something the gods are even envious of.
Exactly.
We're always trying to be like the gods, but the gods sometimes want to be like us.
They do.
And there's some experiences that are mortal, that are human, that are enviable. like pain and grief and sorrow and beauty and orgasms.
Exactly.
And
writing,
love,
writing and being on the
creation,
radio.
Creation, yeah.
Creation, building a business, connecting with your community. So that's being being yourself for a living. That's my term for that whole space that you're talking about, where you're awake, you're doing your passions, you're growing your business, you're learning the lessons of life, you're falling in love, you're breaking, your heart's broken. Live fully, because in that we will make conscious decisions that where the old is just gone. It just stops. And we're spreading consciousness all the time about everything that we do. So if your work is aligned with your spiritual journey, which you never have to mention, it's not a thing you have to define.
Mm-hmm.
That's the conundrum, because consciousness cannot be defined. Consciousness is the source from which everything defined comes.
The wellspring.
It's higher than definition. It's higher than mind. So consciousness is something that can watch the mind. The mind is like a calculator or a phone. It's a tool.
Uh-huh.
Whereas consciousness can watch my hands go from 5 years old in my go-kart,
yeah,
and now I drive here and my hands are 50 years old. But I'm the same. I'm going to watch myself die.
Are you worried about death?
Well, on some level, I'm terrified of it. On another level, I'm intrigued. It depends on my mood of the day. But
what do you think is going to happen? In your own personal feel about what the world is and where you'll go and what's...
Me personally,
your
my
spirit,
death.
Your soul, whatever you believe. Okay. What do you think's going to be around the corner?
I want to be here when it happens. I'm scared to say that, but that's what I want. So I'm hoping to be able to go consciously and so that I can watch what goes on, not be unconscious or distracted. Afraid, you know. So just watch what happens with
even
intrigue.
Even in the moment of death, to be conscious and to be aware in that moment.
Yes. Look, hopefully it's a... But whatever happens, we are all comfortable with death. We are doing it all the time. On the level of you go on holiday and you've had three of the best weeks of your life and you leave and go home, that's a death. Mm-hmm. You have to grieve. And if you don't grieve, you can't go back to work. Well, this isn't games here. It's a death of the old you. You change studios. The last time we chatted, you were down there. The smallest thing has a symbolic meaning in your life. And if you're living consciously, that symbolic meaning becomes tactile to you. It's like synchronicity. It's in the air. And it's more alive. Your life is poetry in motion. And I just write that shit down. I just engage with life and I create from that place. And then it becomes, you know, the book becomes an actual published book, because you know, you write it, you publish it. Now I'm using it as a conversation piece, and the book stands alone. I mean, that you go and read that book, people have been taking, I'd say, 6 weeks to read that book. It's fascinating to me to have people have come to the launch and go away, and then, you know, some reactions, and then just takes people down the rabbit hole into who they are. And then I'm seeing how people are responding with it, you know.
Well, that's interesting, because I think we do live in an age where people tend to feel that they're allowed to be somewhat self-absorbed. But there's a difference between being self-absorbed and being conscious.
Totally, because one is the self.
Yeah, that's the ego you're talking about. Yeah.
And conscious is outside of ego, which... you know, sometimes you have to go the wrong way to find out who you're not. You're not that self, but it is there. So, like what I say, they're different. It's like layers of a cake.
Mm-hmm.
If you are an enlightened master and you have diarrhea, you need to go to the bathroom. Enlightenment doesn't help. Okay,
yeah, so it's no easier for you than it would be for
you'll
some.
You'll be enlightened on the crapper, but you still have to go there. Now, if your father's died and you need to grieve, you need to cry that out until it's out. So we've got a physical body, an emotional body, and all of them have digestive systems that need to just go through the motions, to hum in a harmonious thing, like when you've serviced your own car, which is the kind of thing I say there when I was a teenager. And you've created a relationship with your environment that's like a warm, humming, balanced thing. Mm. And if we all manage ourselves, our own individual consciousnesses, I'm getting so excited, and our relationships that way, we can co-create things and stop doing what stopped working long ago and do the things we want to do, the creative things. But then there's a very important thing, which is open to the new, because you can't solve problems using the paradigm that the problem is formed in. And
yeah, we can't use 16th century solutions to modern problems.
So I'll often have conversations and people will describe how everything's a mess, and you probably work with that sort of stuff all every day, evaluating it in yourself, speaking to people, being responsible to your community, stimulating but holding together. You play a leadership role. You're doing that. Everybody's grappling with it, and then I'll say, this is the set of problems, and then say, but what do we do? And then I stop them and I say, stop there. That's the old, okay? Let it go. Let it be there. Don't fight. Don't worry. Don't chew it.
It is what it is.
It is what it is, like my phone over there, but there's space around it. Now, be that space, because if you do that, you're conscious, number one, and number two, there's a gap, so you don't just do the same thing again. Oh, okay, let's discuss the same problems again. Oh, shit, look what happened in the news. Let's discuss. You just allow the new to come. Let something new happen. You might have to, for a moment, pause or suspend yourself, your mind, your thinking. Have an orgasm. Every time you get stuck, have a wank, Gareth.
Jesus, I don't know if that's going to go well. I don't know if that's socially responsible.
I'm talking a lot.
Well, that's the word of the day.
Well, there we go,
take
everybody.
Take that word with us. Yeah. I can see from your face.
Have more orgasms. Yeah. Well, it's a
have
listen.
Have fun. Be naughty.
We've covered a lot of territory here, but by no means have we begun to get into some of the meat of the book. It is Robin Wheeler's new book. It's called Death is the Ultimate Orgasm. You don't want to die before you read this, according to him. It's a handbook on how to live and die. You don't get more comprehensive.
I'm trying to cover all the
ambitious
bases.
Title for a book than that. I do like it. Well, Robin, it's always nice to see you, and thanks
so
much.
So great sharing it with you.
Lovely. Always good.
All the best to you guys. Do your thing.
When are you off to Thailand again?
I don't have a date. That's why I'm.
Oh, you're living. But very soon. You're living in the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
You're waiting for it to come.
Exactly. That's the brilliant way to finish
come
the whole.
Come and come.
Well, I didn't mean that, but now that you say it.
Someone says here, Robin, you sound like such a pervert. I love it. good
I went
morning.
To Catholic school.
Yeah. Mike Agostini said, ask Robin about the book on the same topic called Death, the Ultimate Orgasm. That's from Derek. And there are some other people saying that we love this, the idea that you can be more conscious and live your life more aware of what's going on around you. Okay. Loads of messages coming in. So did you want to address any of those?
Quickly then, that middle one about that death, the ultimate orgasm. I was in London last September, sitting in a coffee shop in just off, it was at Marble Arch, and someone tweeted that book title.
Yes.
And I hadn't heard it before. So I went and looked it up right there because I was on Wi-Fi. And it's called Death,
the ultimate orgasm.
Question mark. Yeah. So the guy's asking that question. And he takes a whole lot of near-death experiences and sort of...
Oh, okay. So he's looking at the near-death stuff.
He's an Australian guy. Okay. That does come up in my book. Just one of the strands. My book's a whole lot of strands that converge. But what I'm saying there is it's an Eastern thing. It's nothing really new.
Yeah, address this one. Someone says, what the fuck? Who is this guy? He reminds me of the charlatan preachers of my youth. Science and technology will get us out of the environmental mess, not fucking and wanking all day.
Oh.
What do you want to say to that guy?
Well, I'd say as a scientist, he sounds very emotional.
That's an interesting observation. All right.
It is.
All right, everybody. Thank you very much. It's 8:05. We are out of here. Thank you for joining us this morning. A big thank you to Robin Wheeler, our guest. Thank you to you for joining
us. Guys.
We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9.
This is CliffCentral.com.